second case is United States against Mitchell, counsel for the defense.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Major Rick Bellis, and I represent the appellant, Corporal Mike Mitchell, in this appeal. Chief Judge, I found with your permission, I'd ask that 5 minutes of my time to reserve for rebuttal. This is a case about providency of pleas. The military judge abused his discretion in accepting appellant's plea of guilty to indecent assault, and he failed to elicit statements from appellant that appellant possessed the specific intent to gratify his own lust or sexual desires. Second, the military judge abused his discretion when he failed to address and reconcile statements made by appellant during both the plea inquiry and unsworn statement that were inconsistent with appellant's plea of guilty to marijuana distribution. The military judge should not accept a plea of guilty when the factual circumstances as established by an accused either raise a potential defense or fail to objectively establish all the elements of the offense alleged. In the case at bar concerning the granted issue, appellant does not dispute that the foundational elements for aiding and abetting an offense, as described in United States v. Gosselin and United States v. Pritchett in paragraph 1b-2b of the manual, were established. However, in a case where the underlying offense requires proof of a particular criminal state of mind, such as specific intent, the court must also, in addition to considering Gosselin and Pritchett in paragraph 1b-2b of the manual, consider paragraph 1b-4 of the manual. Paragraph 1b-4 tells us that for a perpetrator to be convicted, of an offense that requires a particular criminal state of mind, such as specific intent, the aider and abettor, in order to also be convicted of the same underlying offense, must be shown to possess the same specific intent as the perpetrator.
So just to be clear, for someone to be an aider and abettor for an indecent assault, they would have to themselves have the intent to gratify their lust or sexual desires by the other person's actions?
That is exactly what appellant's position is, Your Honor.
Now, counsel, is that a manual-based argument? Is it a statutory-based argument? Is it a constitutional-based argument? Or is it a common law argument that you're...
Appellant supports his position by looking at the explanation of the offense, paragraph 1b-2b and paragraph 1b-4 of the manual, as well as case law. Concerning specifically, if we look at United States versus Richards, although the issue before this court in that case was the legal sufficiency of PFC Richards' voluntary manslaughter conviction, the question before the court was, did PFC Richards have the specific intent to inflict grievous bodily harm on the victim in that case? Not did PFC Richards have the intent that the perpetrator had the intent to inflict grievous bodily harm on the perpetrator. If we also look at this court's decisions in Gosselin, as well as Simmons, those were guilty plea cases in which this court set aside the guilty plea in cases involving aiding and abetting, in part because there was not evidence establishing that the aider and abettor intended to bring about the particular crime alleged. Again, the focus was not, did the aider and abettor intend for the perpetrator to intend to commit a particular offense. The focus, as paragraph 1b-4 of the manual would appear to indicate, is does the aider and abettor himself intend to bring about the particular crime that is charged? And as we know in this case, indecent assault is a specific intent offense which requires proof that the offensive touching be done in a manner such that one's lust or sexual desire.
Well, getting back to Richards, if the accused does not intend the end result, then that case stands for proposition that there's not the intent needed to be the aider and abettor. In the case before us, what shows us that the accused did not receive intend the end result, that is, that the perpetrator would satisfy his particular sexual interest in the case?
That fact was stipulated to, actually, in the stipulation of fact, but appellant did admit that his counsel to Lance Corporal Beckham to have sexual intercourse with Ms. Collins was done with the intent to gratify Lance Corporal Beckham's own lust and sexual desire.
And in Richards, was there any indication that in providing the assistance that the accused did not intend the result that was achieved in the case? That is, that the intent to commit the offense by the perpetrator.
If I recall this court's holding correctly, it was that by virtue of kicking the victim, there was sufficient evidence for the members to infer that PFC Richards would have intended to inflict grievous bodily harm, despite his protestations that he did not know that the perpetrator had a knife and wanted to kill the victim.
Right. So I'm not sure why Richards helps you there.
Well, appellant would submit that with respect to the intent element, this court did appear to focus on whether PFC Richards intended to bring about a specific intent offense, which was voluntary manslaughter. So on the intent element, appellant would make that argument.
So you're making a negative inference from Richards then?
That appeared to be the court's focus, was on what did PSC Richards intend to bring about, not what did he intend to have the perpetrator bring about.
Right, but you're making the reverse inference then, that in a case in which that intent wasn't shown, a conviction wouldn't lie.
It would not lie, or at least it would have to be a lesser offense, perhaps, involuntary
manslaughter. Where in Richards does it say that?
It doesn't. The issue is legal sufficiency.
Okay. Now, with respect to the manual, our case law, I believe, makes it pretty clear that the manual is not binding on this court with respect to Part 4, unless there's a provision that, by its term, provides rights to the accused, as the executive branch is seeking to bind itself in that regard. But otherwise, it's regarded as persuasive but not authoritative guidance. What in the text or the underlying purpose of paragraph 1B4 would suggest that this is anything more than non-binding guidance?
I don't know that it's anything more than non-binding guidance, other than this is the explanation of the offense, and as interpreted by this court's decisions, again, in Simmons, in Gosselin, in Richards, and also in Thompson, which is the aiding and abetting for the rape case.
Gosselin was a case in which you basically had total passivity on the part of the supposed aider and abetter. He just rode in the car. That's not this case.
Thompson, Your Honor?
Gosselin.
Oh, Gosselin. Yes, Your Honor. In that particular case, PFC Gosselin was along for the ride.
He was along for the ride, and there was no evidence he did anything.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right. That's what that case turned on.
I believe this court's holding in that case was not only was there not active participation to facilitate the crime, but also that Gosselin did not intend to bring these drugs aboard the Air Force Base in Germany. So there were two elements missing.
Do you agree that case law can be read and cuts both ways? Is that fair to say that both sides can draw different cases out here?
Do you think
it's all one way from your standpoint?
Probably the purpose the problem lies in, if we look at paragraph 1B, 2B, where it says the aider and abettor must share in the criminal purpose of design. That those appear to be subject to a certain amount of interpretation, but appellant would submit that the government cannot cite one case.
What about Pritchard?
Pritchett, Your Honor, was again another case involving legal sufficiency of the evidence where the court found sufficient facts to determine that Technical Sergeant Pritchett intended to distribute marijuana and possess it with intent to distribute based upon, you know, findings of his fingerprints on the packages of hashish and him holding the money bag at the time his apartment was raided by the police.
Is there anything in the text of Article 77 that itself would indicate this interpretation?
The way appellant reads the plain language of paragraph 1B4.
No, I said the statute.
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
No, Your Honor.
So what you're relying on is an executive gloss on the statute.
Yes, Your Honor.
Go back to Pritchett, if you would.
Yes, Your Honor.
What about the language? All that is necessary is to show some affirmative participation, which at least encourages the principal to commit the offense in all of its elements as defined by the statute. And I'm trying to figure out whether the case law all cuts one way or not.
Appellant would submit that's open to interpretation by both parties, Your Honor.
Is the manual's aiding and abetting provision, or the aiding and abetting provision, derivative of the common law? Or is it a separate and distinct from the common law?
I believe it would reflect the common law, Your Honor, if we look at the analysis to Article.
Should we look to other federal appellate circuits as to how we interpret Article 1 there?
I would say yes, Your Honor. In fact, if we look at Pritchett, I think this court identified four elements that are required for proof of aiding and abetting, and it cites, I believe, a D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals decision, so that would be appropriate, Your Honor.
Now, aren't you walking yourself into dealing with all those other federal court decisions and lead cases like Peone and so on?
Potentially, Your Honor, but appellant is not aware of any federal statute dealing in a federal district court or circuit court of appeals where it's an offense analogous to what the military has under Article 134, indecent assault, where the offense of touching has to be done with in a manner that turns on one's lust or sexual desires. So that's why appellant is unaware of any federal cases.
Federal cases go to what's required for aiding and abetting. And as in Peone, it was the association with the offense, not necessarily the shared intent.
Your Honor, I'm having
it's a... not a trick question.
Okay. I'm just having a difficult time recollecting the facts of that case, Your Honor. So I apologize.
Counsel, I'd like to go back to Goslin and Pritchard. And in both of those cases, the court said that the specific intent to facilitate the commission of a crime by another, that's the only thing that we look at, which seems in direct conflict to paragraph 1B4. And in both of those cases, I don't believe paragraph 1B4 was included in the opinion. In either opinion, what should we take from that?
We should take, Your Honor, that appellant does not dispute that he intended to facilitate a crime on the night in question, and that's where the court can find intent that that's where I believe the language in Simmons or in Gossman that this court is talking about shared intent. There is no intent on part of the aider and abettor in those cases to bring about the commission of an offense. If there had been an intent in those cases and the underlying offense was a specific intent offense, then this court needs to consider paragraph 1B4. Because those were not specific intent offenses, it didn't need to consider paragraph
1B4. So you don't see a conflict between 1B4 and the holdings in those two cases?
No, Your Honor, not in regards to when the underlying offense is a specific intent offense. That's when appellant believes 1B4 comes into play.
But do those two cases command 1B4?
Certainly Gossman does not, Your Honor. Simmons, assuming that the underlying battery in that case was an intentional battery, potentially what could be a specific intent offense, I believe. However, again, in Simmons, There just wasn't evidence that this court found by Corporal Simmons' words that his inaction demonstrated an intent on his part to bring about a battery against the victim.
Right. What I'm trying to get at is it appears that 1B4 represents an attempt to derive a principle from our case law, as opposed to 1B4 literally stating, repeating what is in our case law. Is that a fair assessment?
Possibly, sir.
In other words, can you point to any case which literally has the language of 1B4 in it? I'm not suggesting that 1B4 is necessarily out of bounds. My question is 1B4 a restatement of our case law, in which case we would look to our case law as the precedent, or is 1B4 a principle that's derived from our case law, in which case we decide whether we agree with that principle or not?
It's probably the latter, Your Honor. I would ask this court to consider Judge Sullivan's concurring opinion in Richards, where he stated that in his view, the aider and abettor must share the intent of the perpetrator. An appellant would read that to mean that if the aider and abettor does not have intent to bring about the crime as applied to himself, then there's not sufficient intent for purposes of 1B4 of the man. Certainly, a review of the facts as described by appellant in the plea inquiry and in the stipulation of fact and in his statement to NCIS, appellant's words and actions on the night in question were far from noble. However, they do not establish that he intended to bring about any crime greater than an assault consummated by a battery. If I may move on to the specified issue, if there are no further questions on the granted issue. The military judge abused his discretion in accepting appellant's plea of guilty to marijuana distribution when he failed to reconcile statements made by appellant, where appellant stated that as he stood before the military judge on the day of trial, he did not believe that the substance distributed was in fact actually marijuana. In fact, the very first question posed by the military judge to the appellant at page 60 of the joint appendix, just tell me what you did in order to be guilty of that specification. Appellant responded that at the time, I thought that the substance I was giving Lance Corporal Beckham was marijuana. At the time of the investigation, I thought it was. Come to find out towards the end of the month of August that the actual stuff that I had given Lance Corporal Beckham wasn't marijuana. If we fast forward a couple pages further in the appendix to pages 64, on two separate occasions, on page 64, the military judge asked Lance Corporal Beckham, do you believe that the substance at the time he transferred it was in fact marijuana? Appellant said, at the time, sir, yes, sir. And finally, one more question by the military judge, do you believe that everything we have just talked about establishes that you're guilty of marijuana distribution? Appellant says again, at the time, sir, yes, sir. That is qualifying language that should have raised a red flag in the military judge's mind, and was compounded during the unsworn statement where the trial defense counsel asked the appellant to tell the military judge whether he profited from the sales of marijuana to Lance Corporal Beckham, and the appellant responded, and I was given the actual supposedly marijuana. So we have three instances during the plea inquiry and one instance during the unsworn statement which demonstrate that as appellant stood before the military judge on the day of trial, he did not believe that the substance transferred was in fact marijuana. All the military judge needed to do was ask the appellant, as you stand here before me, Corporal Mitchell, do you believe that the substance you transferred to Lance Corporal Beckham was marijuana? If he said no, an inquiry would be made as to whether there was a reasonable defense. If yes, then the government would be free to either accept a lesser-included offense of attempt or to go forward on the greater offense and try and prove up actual distribution.
Is it your view, counsel, that the military judge can rely in no way, shape, or form on the stipulation of fact?
Certainly the stipulation of fact would go greatly to the proficiency of the plea, but if we look very carefully at the language at page 117 of the joint appendix, which is, I believe, last page of the stipulation of fact, the parties very carefully used the language at the time of the transactions. Clifford Mitchell believed the substance he sold to be marijuana. That's different from...
And you're arguing that are inconsistent in any event, are you not?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. In RCM 910E, 910H, United States versus Felipe, indicate that the military judge is obligated to stop the plea if the appellant says something that's either inconsistent with his pleas or raises a potential defense, make an inquiry or explain a potential defense and elicit facts that negate that defense, and that was not done in this case. So appellant is guilty of attempted distribution, but not actual distribution.
How does it help you in this case other than modification of the charge?
Your Honor, appellant would submit both on the granted issue that appellant is guilty of no more than a lesser included offense of assault.
Let's assume that we're focusing on the specified issue now, so let's assume without us deciding here that,
yes,
that you'd lose on the granted issue.
Certainly the intent element is identical for actual distribution and intent or attempted distribution, but appellant would submit that a rehearing on sentence would be warranted because there is a difference between a service member who puts $240 worth of actual marijuana into the bodies of other Marines and sailors and a service member who puts $240 of some other non-contraband substance into the bodies of other Marines and sailors. So the intent element is clearly equally aggravating, but the ultimate impact on the good order and discipline of the offense would be less aggravating for the attempted distribution, and that would warrant a new rehearing on sentence. There are no further questions. This concludes my argument.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Counsel for the government.
Good morning, may it please the court. I am Major Ty Lay, along with Colonel Louis Perillo, who represent the United States. There are two issues before this court today. The first, appellant is a perpetrator as defined in Article 77. There is adequate evidence to show that the appellant has the specific intent to satisfy his lust and sexual desires. The appellant observed, encouraged, and directed the indecent assault of the victim. The record states from the appellant's comments during his privacy inquiry are the evidence that the government is relying on. First, the appellant said, "We only got really two options, either leave her here or make her sweat." Appellant said that on the Joint Appendix 42 and 112. Appellant further clarified that statement to the military judge by saying, having sex with her. Appellant also told Ms. Griffin Beckham to, quote, "Do your thing," end quote. Appellant intended and encouraged Ms. Rebecca to have sexual intercourse with the victim. That's in Joint Appendix 113.
Did you say in your opening remarks that the appellant was a perpetrator or a principal? I thought you said that he was the perpetrator.
Yes, Your Honor. Under Article 77 as a discussion, principals were explain and do it away with in terms of principle and common laws, principle one, level one and two. And everything, it got away with perpetrators and aided and abetted to become principal, which under 77 would be either a person who commits the act himself or someone who commissioned someone else or assisted someone else in committing that act. That would be a perpetrator. And it's the government's position today that the appellant is a perpetrator because he assisted and commissioned and aided Masquita Beckham in committing the indecent assault.
Are you saying that you accepting the defense argument that he has to have the same specific intent? And you seem to be saying that and then saying he had that intent.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'm misstated. The government is position is the appellant had the specific intent to commit defense of indecent assault as a perpetrator under the theory that he commission Ms. Beckham to commit indecent assault.
You're arguing the alternative, are you not? Or is that the sum total of the government's argument?
That's the alternative.
Okay. That's one argument. What's your other argument?
The second one is the opponent's other parties. Should this court find that there are insufficient evidence to support that he has the specific intent to commit indecent acts by having Nancy Beckham as the perpetrator actually commit the indecent act, then the other theory is the challenge the other parties under Article 77. By that means, U.S. v. Gosselin.
Wait a minute. Are you saying either he's an aider and abettor or he's the perp? Is the alternative theory aiding and abetting?
Yes, Your Honor. Other parties. Under Article 77 is taken away that aider and abettor might to other
Which parties. Is your stronger argument?
Young believes that both arguments are equally strong, Your Honor. To be honest.
See, it's a hope they don't think one's good and the other's bad, and then you lose both, right? Okay. What do you make of the fact that the military judge seems to have adopted the appellant's argument when he gave his instructions, or he described the elements to the appellant? Does that have any bearing on this case?
Can you repeat that, Ron?
When the military judge is describing during the plea inquiry for the accused what the elements of aiding and abetting are at page 29, he seems, the government can argue otherwise, he seems to adopt the appellant's view now of what the law is. He says, although you must consciously share in the perpetrator's actual criminal intent to be an aider and abettor, there's no requirement that you agree or even have the knowledge of the means by which he's going to do it. And then he goes through the six elements of the offense, or seven, and he describes as the sixth that the acts were done with the intent to gratify lust or sexual desires. My question is, does that have any bearing on the question before us today?
No, sir. So don't. No.
Okay, why not? If the military judge had the law, so you're saying the military judge had the law wrong? Do you have page 29 before you? You might want to look at it. And of course, you don't need to look at it if the view is it's not material to anything, but does it make a difference that the judge, let's stipulate that the judge adopted appellant's view of the law of aiding and abetting in his plea colloquy, is that at all relevant to this case? And if not, why not?
So the government's position is it doesn't because of the fact that the military judge is going down the litany of risk in the under Article 77, and by stating those elements to the appellant, he's allowing the appellant to understand what he is pleading to. What the government's position today is that when the appellant pled guilty to indecent assault,
that ties in with theory number one.
Yes, sir.
And what about theory number two, though? This is an instruction on aiding and abetting.
So, and Your Honor, in other parties, the requirements under that is defined in U.S. v. Gosselin, which this court set out four factors in considering to determine whether an accused is other parties. The first one is specific intent to facilitate the commission of a crime by another. The second, guilty knowledge on the part of the accused. Two, that an offense was being committed by another. And four, the accused assisted in the commission of the offense. We'll focus on the factor two here, which is the guilty knowledge on part of the accused. Here, the government position is that the appellant knew or had knowledge of Lance Corporal Beckham's intent And the appellant has also conceded in their argument that in the record, when the military asked the appellant, when asked appellant acknowledged in the affirmative, acknowledging the affirmative that Lance Corporal Beckham touched the victim in order to satisfy his sexual desire, Lance Corporal Beckham's sexual desire.
Well, what do we do then with the language in paragraph 1B4 that, as you read it, it appears the plain language says that when you're dealing with the underlying crime as a specific intent crime, that the individual charged as an aider and abettor must himself have that specific intent, not that the perpetrator, the person who is committing the crime, have that, but that the aider and abettor have that specific intent.
Yes, Your Honor. They don't recognize that under that paragraph. He speaks the record of specific intent. However, the government's position is that Gosling is a good test to apply specific intent as well as it was applied under general intent crimes, which were in Gosling and Pritchard.
Well, Gosling, I don't think, was a specific intent case.
No, it was not. No, it was a general
intent. So let's talk about a specific intent case as we're dealing with here.
That's right.
And what is the effect of the language in 1B4 on this case?
The government believes that although the discussion is not, first of all, it's a discussion, it's non-binding to this court, and that it's just explaining the meanings and the words within under the article.
So did they get it wrong?
It's our position, Your Honor, that I would say yes.
Okay. I mean, that's a fair answer. I mean,
yes,
if you certainly our cases that have dealt with this area have not addressed that. I mean, the cases have gone this way and the rule here or the discussion has gone the other way. But we're now left in the quandary that if, in fact, that rule says what it appears to say, that's not very helpful to the government's position.
But the government's contention, Your Honor, is that the four factors in Gosling can be applied in the same, and the analysis in Gosling can be applied to specific intent cases as well as general intent. The reason being is here it's just knowledge. The knowledge of the requirement was not required for appellant share in the specific intent of the underlying offense. Here in our case would be the appellant sharing in the specific intent of gratifying his own lust or sexual desired as an escort method. All it requires that he knew someone who had the knowledge of the actors here, Lance Corporal Beckham's intent. And it states clearly in the record, he admits it to a military judge, that he knew that Lance Corporal Beckham was touching the victim in order to satisfy his lust.
Well, let's assume that 1B4 says what it, or means what it says. What in the record can show us that the appellant here was involved to satisfy his own sexual desires?
Well, Your Honor, there's nothing in the record that states that. The record itself only goes to where the state of mind of the appellant, his action, when he encouraged, aided, and abetted under the government's first theory as a perpetrator.
Counsel, is it your position that this court should be looking to decisions by other federal circuit courts, for example, the tests that Judge Leonard Hand set forth, United States versus Peony, for a proper test as to what aiding and abetting means? Or I ask that because you don't cite any of those cases in your brief.
Admits that there are no cases to specific intent in regards to this issue within the military jurisdiction. However, in the federal courts, there are cases that cites there is a requirement for specific intent by the aid and abettor under specific intent crimes. Our position that we ask that this court apply Gosling under its own ruling for general intent within the jurisdiction.
You're getting yourself coming and going on the specific intent theory one issue. In your brief, you say it's supported by the fact that he was watching, that the record indicates that he was watching while this was going on. And I just want to give you a chance to clarify which, what is your position, so the appellant has an opportunity to address it and rebut it if he wishes to. Regarding to theory number one, and we'll stipulate that theory number one is a perpetrator theory.
Yes, sir.
Judge Erdman's question was, where on the record is there any indication, either direct or through implication, that this appellant was seeking to satisfy his own lust and gratification, or whatever that is? And in your brief, you say that's reflected by the fact that he was watching. Are you not standing by that?
No, sir. I'm standing on that.
Point to me where in the record your argument is supported, if at all.
Can I have an answer?
Yeah, of course. You understand what I'm getting at? I don't want your argument. I want your facts.
For example, counsel, if you look at the appellant's confession, you know, such as is, or his statement to NCIS, he sounds like he was peeved and bored by the whole.
And take a moment to consult with your second chair if you need to. That's the whole point of having a second chair. They're not here as an audience.
Yes.
If you wish, that's your business.
The language that Judge Baker was referring to is at the bottom of page 11 of the government's brief.
Yes, sir. Your Honor, in answer to your question, the facts to where the specific intent is, where the appellant admitted that he's the one who encouraged Lance Beckham to make her sweat, which is to have sex with her. He encouraged Lance Beckham to digitally penetrate the victim. And that's Joint Appendix 96. He admitted to the NCIS that, in quote, do you stick your finger in him or anus? And that's Joint Appendix 120.
Now, is the NCIS statement part of the plea inquiry? It's a question, not a statement.
No, sir. It was part of the inquiry as evidence.
Can you go to page 11 of your brief at the bottom? Now, I thought that in response to my earlier question, you said that there was no evidence regarding appellant's individual intent to satisfy his lust or sexual desires. And as Judge Baker pointed out in the brief at the bottom of page 11, you make the argument that there was sufficient evidence. And we just need a clarification as to where you're at.
Yes, Your Honor. The evidence is taking the totality of evidence in terms of what the appellant did. He's the one who instigated the indecent assault. Lance Beckham was not, initially didn't want to do this. His mom said it was just to take her home and leave the victim. But he was afraid that they would get in trouble because she was...
But the question is here whether he was doing that to satisfy his own sexual desires or Beckham's sexual desires.
And the first theory, Your Honor, is the fact that he encouraged him to do this. He's watching, about sitting in the front seat of the driver's side, looking back, answering to a military judge when he asked him, did you know she was awake or not? He said he couldn't tell because of the fact he wasn't paying attention to her face. Basically, from those inferences, one can reasonably person can infer that he's watching what's going on, he's having lustful thoughts, his sexual desires are being satisfied. Because he's not paying attention to anyone else, he's watching him, and now he's encouraging Lance Corporal Becklin to do other things, to penetrate her. Initially, he actually, in reading the record, he encouraged Lance Corporal Becklin to rape the victim. If he, in fact, had done what the appellant had encouraged, which is to have sexual intercourse with her, it would have been rape. But since he only digitally penetrated her and touched her and did something, that's where we're on now today.
But is rape a specific intent crime?
No, Your Honor, it's not.
Counsel, I'd like to return to the manual provision. You're here representing the government of the United States today.
Yes, sir.
And as I understand, it's the position of the government of the United States that the President in 1B4 has issued an invalid executive order. Can you please feel free to consult?
Executive order confuses me between knowledge and specific intent, where this court has clarified it under Gosselin. It's the government position that it's not going against the executive order's contention, is that there is confusion because of that paragraph. And this court cleared it up under Gosselin.
So that your view is that paragraph 1B4 is valid and it's been reinterpreted? Is that your position?
No, it's not valid.
So what is your position as to the meaning of paragraph 1B4? It's in an executive order. Is it valid or is it not valid?
Excuse me, John. It's inartfully drafted.
And so to the extent it's inartfully drafted, the government's view is that Gosselin squares it up. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor. And because of that, the government is asking this court to apply the Gosselin analysis for specific intent as well.
So you're asking us to disregard the literal words of paragraph 1B4. Is that correct? And is that because it's improper under the Constitution? That is, was the President precluded from issuing those words?
Also, it's because it's unclear.
Because it's unclear.
It leaves ambiguity between the element of knowledge and intent. Whereas Gosselin clears that up by the second factor, which is the guilty knowledge on the part of the accused. Government's position here is that the appellant did have the guilty knowledge. He admitted it to the military judge. And because of that, he's guilty as another party under Article 77.
Okay, thank you.
Moving on to the second issue before this court, again, the specified issue of the guilty plea in province and the marijuana distribution. Appellant's guilty plea is problematic because he repeatedly admitted that the substance he distributed was in fact marijuana. There exists no substantial basis for setting aside the guilty plea, lest the military judge did not abuse his discretion
Okay, how do you deal with the language on record 51 that at the time of the investigation, I thought it was, sir, but come to find out towards the end of the month of August, sir, that the stuff that, the actual stuff that I had given, whatever, Lance Corporal Beckham wasn't marijuana, at least from the person that told me, that gave me the actual substance, was not marijuana?
Your Honor, that is a qualitative answer to a military judge. The government's position is that accused generally tends to, it's a human nature to lessen or mitigate your plea, mitigate your guilt.
Right, but that's not the issue. The issue is whether the military judge had a duty to inquire further than at the time and say something like, are you trying to mitigate the circumstances or whatever? Was it or was it not marijuana? Was the judge, isn't the judge supposed to do something at this point? Why not?
Governor's position on that, Your Honor, is the military judge sitting there at the time listening to the totality of the evidence and what was said previously, and also there was a stipulation of fact. Because of that, the military judge, it's Governor's belief that the military judge understood what the appellant was admitting to at the time when he said those things, and it was, in his mind, it was unclear that whether
he was. But it's not clear that the appellant knew what he was admitting to.
Your Honor,
is he supposed to know it's marijuana at the time he's doing it, or the time he's pleading guilty, or how does that work?
He's supposed to know at the time when he's pleading that it's marijuana, at the time of the provency. And if he didn't, then his defense counsel, which he was represented by at the time, would have corrected that as well. And both trial defense counsels did not interject when this provency inquiry was progressing.
Who's running the inquiry, the counsel or the judge?
The judge, no. But the military, we asked them what, I believe, what the military judge should have done.
So is it your view that this is not an inconsistent statement, or that it does not rise to the level of undermining the plea?
It does not rise.
Well, let me answer the question for you.
It does not rise to.
Among the following options, which do you pick? Go ahead.
It does not rise to that. No.
Is it inconsistent with the plea?
No, Your Honor. Contrary to the appellant's assertion in appeal at trial, he demonstrated familiarity with marijuana. He repeatedly admitted that the substance he sold in that school Beckham was marijuana. When the appellant...
Well, now, hang on. He repeatedly said, I believe it was, but he didn't repeatedly say it was. And then he said, the guy who gave it to me said it wasn't. So why is that repeatedly saying it was?
Your Honor, throughout the province, it was the question between the military judge and the appellant. He asked him if it was marijuana. He answered in the affirmative. There were three different occasions when he interjected with the comments of, I believe at the time it was, to that effect.
It's your position then that a hearsay statement from an unidentified individual to the effect that it wasn't, isn't enough in and of itself to raise an inconsistency with the plea?
Yes, Your Honor. When appellant comments did raise an inconsistency as to the nature of the substance, the military judge didn't go into further inquiry in regards to that. The military judge flushed out the information that the appellant admitted that it was a green leafy substance. He admitted that at the time he obtained, he identified the substance as marijuana. He stated that the marijuana was also expensive in Okinawa because the military judge asked him about the prices. He said it was expensive compared to to the marijuana he had purchased in the United States. Appellants also sold the substance to Lance Corporal Beckham on two other occasions, and at both times there was no dispute or confusion to what they believed the substance to be. The appellant repeatedly admitted that he sold Lance Corporal Beckham marijuana. The only question regarding the nature of the substance arose when there was, in fact, that hearsay comment, Your Honor. And At that point, the military judge went into further inquiry, establishing what the substance was by the appellant's knowledge. The appellant established factual basis for his distribution.
What's the source in the record for that last statement that the military judge established out of his mouth that it was marijuana after receiving the hearsay statement?
Your Honor, in the Joint Appendix 61 and 62, the military judge went to this particular quote. He says, okay, sometimes between June and September 2004, here at Okinawa, Japan, did you distribute what you believe to be marijuana to Lance Corporal Beckham? Yes, sir, the accused. Military judge Moran was disagreeing with the substance, the accused. Yes, sir. That's when he elicited those information.
Yeah, he elicited that he believed it was marijuana. It was a green leafy substance.
He also goes into, based upon what we knew of marijuana, was the price of what you pay for it consistent with what you got? The accused, no, sir. It was a good deal, or was it a bad deal? The accused, so in the States, so for what I was paid for it, sir, it was kind of expensive for what it was. I guess Okinawa, Japan, $60 is like cheap. I guess so over here. And I told Justin for on to, but at the time you bought it, you thought it was marijuana. The accused, yes, sir.
I understand your answer. Thank you.
In light of the entire record, and there is no substantial basis for the military judge to inquire deeper into the appellant's answer at the time or actual or supposedly marijuana. That concludes my argument for the day. If you have no more questions.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal?
Yes.
Three short points to make concerning the blanket issue. One, appellant does not dispute that he counseled and urged Lance Corporal Beckham to have sexual intercourse with Ms. Collins, but appellant does dispute, one, that he was anything more than an aider and abettor, and two, what the level of intent necessary to establish the guilty plea was required concerning a specific intent offense such as indecent assault. Secondly, government counsel mentioned that during a portion of the transaction while the car was parked outside of Ms. Collins' home, appellant did turn around for a moment and watch Ms. Corporal Beckham digitally penetrate Ms. Collins. But in addition to that, there are also portions of the record where appellant is looking forward, looking down on the cell phone. He's getting out of the vehicle to smoke cigarettes. On three separate occasions, he's getting out of the front seat, going around to the back seat, opening and closing the door to test the suspicion that she's faking her sobriety, which are all indicative of someone who is not there to gratify his own lust or sexual desire.
You're addressing issue, theory number one, right? And are you saying in the abstract that looking around and watching cannot amount to specific intent to gratify, or that it was too transient to amount to that, or that based on the totality of the circumstances and these 18 other facts, in this case it wasn't that?
Too transient and based upon the totality of the circumstances, so, in this case.
There's some temporal aspect to gratification of lust. You have to be, however one gratifies, you have to do it for an extended period of time.
Probably not, Your Honor. Probably a few seconds would suffice. I don't know that I'm aware of any cases stating one way or the other, but it's appellant's position that one can watch an R-rated movie with a sex scene in it for a few seconds and not have one's lust or sexual.
But you could also, in the abstract, it could be the opposite as well?
Yes, potentially, Your Honor. But in view of
And I'm just trying to separate law from fact here in terms of your argument. What about the NCIS statement? Is that in or out in terms of providence?
It was admitted during the pre-sentencing proceedings, Your Honor, but this court can look at the entire record of trial in determining whether an element was established or not.
So in your view, is it part of the entire record?
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
And here we're dealing with whether the element was established as opposed to whether the providency inquiry was sufficient.
Yes, Your Honor.
In distinction from issue two.
Yes, Your Honor. And finally, the third point I wanted to make was if this court does find, as appellant contends, that there was not proof of the element of specific intent as applied to appellant and chooses to infirm an LIO of indecent acts, appellant would submit that the more appropriate LIO is not is assault Collins made by a battery, in that it was actually never established during the plea inquiry that this whole transaction in the vehicle was ever indecent. And if we look at the elements as explained by the military judge, although indecent assault is technically called indecent assault, there was never an explanation by the military judge in determining whether this whole transaction as a whole would meet the definition of indecent such that it was grossly vulgar or obscene. So that is why assault consummated by a battery would be the more appropriate LIO. There are no further questions. This concludes appellant's argument.
Thank you, counsel. We thank counsel for both parties for your presentation today. The case is submitted, and the court will be in recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
All rise. Court stands in recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow.